Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Lauryn Hill and the Fugees are seemingly, I say seemingly, back together, and they're coming to Dublin next month for an anniversary show to celebrate Hill's seminal solo album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And more than 25 years on, it's still regarded as one of the best albums ever, regularly at the top of those kinds of lists. So I'm joined now on the line by author, journalist and Lauryn Hill fan, Aoife Barry. Good afternoon, Aoife.
Afternoon, how are things? I have to say, I heard Rita Ann Higgins read that poem in Galway and was bawling crying, so I'm sure plenty of people listening are crying too. But I'll
the one
hold
about
it together
her mother.
To talk to Lauryn.
The one
yes,
about her
exactly.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah. And so we go to another poet. Listen, there's a kind of there's a tale here and a kind of an enigma and everything, and we'll come to that. But the Dublin gig next month is going ahead, right, as things stand, and people don't need to panic. But they might be nervy because she did cancel her US tour last month, didn't she, a few days before it was going to start?
Yes, literally 3 days before it was due to start. No reason was kind of given at the time when it was cancelled. Basically, people who bought tickets for the tour got an email from, I think it was Ticketmaster, saying, you know, yeah, you're actually going to be refunded because this tour, this gig isn't taking place. And then Lauryn Hill went to social media not too long afterwards and basically said, look, there were low ticket sales at this gig. That's why these, you know, gigs aren't going to be taking place, because not enough tickets were sold. And then she basically blamed the media because she said there was a lot of sensationalism, a lot of clickbait headlines around the fact that the tour had actually, some of the dates had actually been moved from the previous year because she had to cancel some of her gigs because she had damaged her voice. She had kind of serious vocal strain and she'd been taking steroids. And she said, well, if you take steroids long term, as everybody knows, that's not necessarily always great for your health. So she was taking a break. She was supposed to come back and then said there was low sales because of what the media were saying about her. Now, like, the background there is that this isn't the first time that there has been a delay or a cancellation, you know, with Lauryn Hill. She has throughout her career a long history of turning up late to things, you know, maybe not turning up, maybe not having the greatest response when she is given out by her fans when she turns up an hour or two late. So I think that she was kind of saying the media are hitting back at me, but I had a good reason this time not to actually be able to do those dates. So now the Dublin gig is the 7th of October, like you're saying. There's still tickets on sale. They start at €98 because tickets costs these days are, you know, not very cheap. And, you know, it's kicking off this, you know, restarted part of the tour. So this gig in Dublin will be the very kind of start of that, of her coming back on stage in that tour with the Fugees as well, which is very significant.
Yeah, although if you look at what Wyclef and Praz Michelle are saying in the aftermath of the American situation, you might wonder how they're all going to get in the same room together. But anyway, so she played in Ireland in 2018 was the last time she was here. That was the 20th anniversary of the Miseducation album. You were at that gig, were you?
I was, yeah. And I actually, the more I think about it, the more reading I was doing and talking to people, the more lucky I feel, because actually that was a really good gig. You know, there is such a long history of her, like I was saying, turning up late. And I don't think she turned up too late in Dublin. Like, her voice isn't quite the same as it was back in the day. Like, she has had that aforementioned vocal strain and she's had kind of issues since early on, really, with that since early 2000s. But she sounded really good. I felt like it was a really great night in terms of just reliving this amazing album and this moment in time. It felt like a you know, real throwback and a lot of like nostalgia for people. And I felt like on the night we got a really good gig. We were, you know, was happy with it. And, you know, she played in Cork around the same time. I was chatting to my aunt about it, who was at the gig, and it was a very different case in Cork. There were complaints from some fans, particularly, you know, online as well, about her turning up a bit late there and doing a much shorter set. So I think her set was only about 50 minutes long. So there is that idea that depending on the night that you turn up, you might not get the same Lauryn Hill as another night that you get. But I think that's the big thing, you know, about her, that you have that nostalgia element and you have these significant albums that she was involved with, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill being her, you know, big kind of magnum opus, her solo album, her debut solo album that means so much to people since it came out in 1998. And there is that level of like fans willing to kind of go along for the ride. But also I think there's more growing that sense. We'll probably get into some of the reasons why, although we've definitely touched on them there, that idea of some fans being like, oh, listen, what's going on? Will you give me what I want from you? And why are things a little bit complicated with her? But 2018, I have fond memories of that gig in Three Arena.
Okay. So before the solo album, she basically, she was kind of around before the Fugees as an actress, was she?
Yeah, exactly. She was. So if anybody listening was watching Sister Act and Sister Act 2, which were just seminal movies for a lot of people, a lot of kids and teenagers in the 90s, particularly young people like myself, really into kind of singing and music. She was in Sister Act 2 in 1993. She starred as the kind of stroppy teenager, very, very talented teenager, Rita Louise Watson. And she really got to let her vocals shine. Like, she had such an amazing voice in that. She also starred before that in a soap opera called As the World Turns, which is that kind of quintessential American soap opera. And she was in her teens, and she was like really into music growing up. And then she met the other two members of what eventually became the Fugees in high school. So Wyclef Jean and Pras Michel. And they signed their record deal as the Fugees in 93. So the same year that she was in Sister Act 2. So she's just like, you know, what, about 18 or so there. So still just a teenager, and it was all kicking off. And then they released their first record the year after that. So in 1994, that was called Blunted on Reality. And, you know, even though there's some pretty good tracks in that, you know, they still remember all the words to, it's not as good at all as The Score, which was their follow-up in 1996. And like, Blunted on Reality didn't do as well as they would have hoped. And, you know, there was talk afterwards that maybe they were kind of encouraged to have a bit of a harder kind of rapping style on it, like vocally. And they moved to The Score, and they made this album that just like really caught people's attention because it used some amazing samples on it. Their kind of lyrical style, their rapping style was really kind of lyrical and fresh and melodic. And then you had Lauryn Hill's vocals, which are just stunning. Like, I remember hearing Ready or Not, and I remember hearing Killing Me Softly in particular when I was younger, when it first came out. And I remember scribbling down on a piece of paper the Fugees, and I remember spelling it F-U-J-I-S, because I had no idea who this band were, that their name came from the word refugee because of the Haitian background, you know, of different members of the band. And that was such a massive smash for them. If you think back to 1996, that album The Score was absolutely everywhere, and that just created these kind of instant stars out of these three really young people. And like you kind of spoke to earlier, they didn't necessarily have the least turbulent relationship going forward, and that's a really interesting thing, I think, about the narrative around them. All this promise, what could they have done? But within a couple of years, she was making her solo album, they were doing their solo stuff, and they never came back together to make another record again.
Okay, so then she made the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, and,
yeah,
and like, to make two kind of seminal albums or to be involved with two is kind of extraordinary. And as you said, like, I don't think I ever appreciated it at the time that for a generation of I think women particularly of a certain age, that album is a huge moment, like, isn't it? And it's still regarded
huge,
as one of the great albums.
It's absolutely huge. And it just, you know, anytime you listen to it, it does not date in any way, even though it feels in many ways also like a very distinctive late 90s album. It's so hard to kind of pinpoint exactly why, but I suppose you have the factors of that she's pulling from the past. You know, if you have this first single, Doo-Wop, That Thing, where she is pulling from that doo-wop sound. So you're immediately brought into the past with that. And the video harked back to kind of the 60s and also to contemporary life in the 90s. And then you have the very modern sense of her vocals, but also her lyrics. And I think her lyrics and the melodies that she has as well are the two keys for me as to why The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill was so massive, because she's singing about her life. And even though she's at this point a huge celebrity and living a life that certainly like a teenage girl like me was not living in Cork in the late 90s, you could really empathize with her because she's talking about these moments like, you know, broken love affairs. And again, you can imagine those happening to you when you're growing up, when you're young listening to them, but also like her heartbreak in different ways. You know, she talks about being pregnant with her first son, Zion, and there's a song to him called To Zion on it, which is just stunning. And she talks about the impact of her career on being a young pregnant woman. And Rohan Marley, who is Bob Marley's son, is actually the father of five of her kids. So she's got a big lineage behind her family too. But she sings about how when she had her first baby with him, people were saying to her, like, Lauren, you know, think about this. You've got a career ahead of you. Maybe you don't want to go through this, you know. And she sings really openly about these pressures and that idea that she was willing to do that.
And the seeds then of what would come, so I guess, were there anyway. So was it that she just found fame hard to handle? Did she, like, she pretty quickly just walked away from it all, yeah?
By about 2000, she was saying that she had deliberately dropped out of the public eye because of all the kind of fame pressures. And, you know, there's a lot of stories around her relationship with the record company, with fame itself, with different individuals, with the members of the band. There's always that kind of complexity, I think, around Lauryn Hill. There's always a complexity around how she got on with people, about her very openly speaking out about issues that she might have about certain things. She also got involved with a spiritual advisor called Brother Anthony around that time. And she was someone who talked about
always
God already.
Good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that can always lead to a little bit of, there's always questions around maybe when people get involved with spiritual advisors. Different members of the Fugees weren't necessarily saying great things about him, shall we say. And so she was speaking out about stuff that maybe people weren't always happy about. She had a live album, an MTV Unplugged album. Those are obviously a big thing around that time. And on that record, her vocals aren't exactly up to scratch. She does have some new songs on it, but she has a lot of kind of talking in between the songs that was bringing up a lot of personal stuff that made it a kind of a difficult listen for some people. And then on top of that, she was also trying to make this fabled second album, you know. And so she's kind of in and out of the public eye. It's so interesting because even though she's like, I'm coming, leaving the public eye, by 2003, she's doing a concert at the Vatican and calling out, you know, paedophilia and different crimes, you know. And she's someone who's
trying to get that second album never got made then. And you mentioned the word potential there. Is that kind of why people are so, in a way, obsessed with this story? That it feels like there was potential there for her to be, you know, I don't know, an Aretha Franklin, a Nina Simone, an artist of a generation, and that that potential was never lived up to. Is that really the story?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it with Lauryn Hill. And like, she wrote a song for Aretha Franklin called A Rose Is Still a Rose. Like, she had the potential to write and has the potential to write absolutely incredible songs. And with that voice, with the kind of, you know, internal emotion that she's bringing through in her writing and the connection she made to people, there was always been that big hope of like, what was she going to do next? And I think the fact that it's been so complicated and that the record label did its best, it seems, really to try and make the kind of conditions around her work, including kind of basically bringing a record studio to her in Miami when she wanted the record studio brought to her. She still had these issues. I mean, she had a band that she made the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill with that was put together called New Arc. And they, members of that group, ended up suing her because they felt they weren't credited effectively. And that was settled out of court for numbers of millions. She ended up getting done for tax evasion. So like, I and I think many other fans were, love what she did and wish that more had happened with her musically. And she has really singles here and there, so it is a sad thing. Perhaps we didn't get
it's
the
a sad thing
record.
But look, hopefully there's a great gig in Dublin next month, and it'll be not just the Lauryn Hill stuff but the Fugees stuff as well. And that could be an amazing moment for people. All right, Aoife Barry, thank you very much. We'll take a break.